welcome back to the ISCast. This is episode 22. It is Sunday, October 5th, and we have the whole crew here today. We have a lot of topics. This month it's been really busy for us, so we are going to kick it off with a pretty important event. Today is
also... Are you going to introduce us?
Well, we always full crew.
We always introduce each other.
We got David, Lee, Sean, Ben, and myself, Wade.
Yay.
And today, October 5th, is the anniversary of Steve Jobs' passing. It was 3 years ago today. Three years ago.
Sad day.
Just real quick, I just wanted to bring it up because Steve Jobs obviously was a big influence on me and maybe you guys as well.
Yes.
Because we all use Apple products. And I think it was a shock for me. I knew he was ill, but I don't know. I was hoping that he had one more thing for us.
I actually remember going to the Apple store at the Mall of America and actually dropping out flowers.
And a card.
And a card, too.
We had written a card for it, yeah.
Yeah.
Or well, when I say we, it was you who wrote it and I signed it.
Yeah. Yeah, you couldn't come for whatever reason, but you were...
Yeah, I might have been a resident.
They also had... I didn't watch it, all of it, but they had a big event...
at the Apple campus.
Where, like, John Ives? Sir John Ive.
Johnny.
Yeah, he gave a really awesome speech about Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was a memorable event. Speaking of Apple, moving on, we have we had Apple's event a few weeks ago where they unveiled their iPhone 6, their iPhone 6 Plus, and the Apple Watch. And this was a keynote that the... that they tried to stream live, but there were some issues.
A lot of issues.
Yeah. Which was unfortunate. I was able to finally get on and listen to the version where they had like a Mandarin or like a Japanese translator.
Like in the background.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, they finally unveiled their watch. And what are you guys' impressions?
I definitely think it's the best looking and best thought out smartwatch on the market right now. I think it was good of them to do the digital crown element for some of the navigation, because I think they're right that on a screen that small, fingers just...
Yeah, you can't touch it.
Yeah, it's too... And like, you know, for some things you can, but yeah, if you're trying to pinch and zoom and whatnot, it's just difficult with fingers.
Right.
Unless you have an iPhone 6 Plus.
I mean, it makes sense that you need an iPhone to go along with it, so it can use a lot of the hardware built into your phone that you might already have with you. It is... $350, which I think is comparable to the other smartwatches out there. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'll have to pull some information up. I think it is more expensive, which, I mean, makes sense for a normal Apple person buying stuff, because usually you're used to your product being a little bit more expensive.
You're used to paying a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the quality is supposed to be...
Well, and it's also a heartbeat sensor, too, which I don't think many of the other ones have. And if you look for...
I can send you my Heartly.
That was a little gimmicky.
One thing, I think... there were some, because there's, you know, there's the three different, you know, kinds of watches. I was like, there's the normal one, which is aluminum. There's the, like, the sport version, which is anodized aluminum. And then there's like the Apple Watch edition.
18 karat.
That's 18 karat. Yeah. And like, some people are saying that thing could cost like $2,000. Or more for when you get that gold on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least they have options. I do like how it's very customizable.
Yeah, the bands are cool.
The bands are amazing.
Yeah, and they had an awesome intro video. Definitely sold me on the product. We'll see what it's like.
There's two sizes of it too. There's a small and a larger.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing about the watch related to Steve is it was the first time they brought back the one more thing too since his passing.
There was quite the ovation, standing ovation when he said that. It gave me shivers.
I was super pumped when he said that.
One other quick thing on it that's really interesting is because I keep up on all the Apple rumors. I go to Mac Rumors and a couple other sites to keep up on. You know,
like every day, like 20 minutes, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm not joking.
No, I'm not. And it is interesting that with the Apple Watch, it had almost nothing about the details of it. Like, there was a schematic that popped up about a week before the event that people were trying to figure out what it was, because it was looking on the side where there was that half circle for where the watch band slides in, and they're really confused about what that was for.
Oh, sure.
And that's it. Like, I think it did come up with, like, screen sizes had been leaked a couple months ago.
I think it helps when you announce it sooner than... you start production, because like as soon as you start production in Asia, like that and, those parts and stuff get leaked.
A good example of that is the iPhone 6, where you know the design was pretty well known in advance. Which, by the way, two of you have the iPhone 6, one of you have the iPhone 6 Plus. Lee has that giant phone, which I will say it is big, but I like
it
a lot.
Glorious.
I've been saying, like, I love my iPhone 6 and I love the size, but handling this one. If I had to have this one, I would not complain about it.
Right.
I think I'd be happy to have it.
The 1080 screen is just amazing, and the battery life is awesome.
Oh, really? Yeah. So
I haven't charged it in like a day, and I'm at like 73%.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That's obviously incredible. It'll go down from here, but
yeah. But hey,
really, it doesn't go up from here.
No.
A lot of awesome Apple stuff recently, and
some new stuff for you.
Yes,
some exciting things.
The last of our intro topics. I have a new position at Game Informer magazine. I'm going to be their video editor. And for anyone who doesn't know, they are the biggest video game magazine in the country. And by circulation, third biggest magazine in the country overall. So they put about 7.5 million copies per month they print. And yeah, it's exciting. I'm going to be producing their online video content. And with me working at Game Informer magazine and David working at Cinequipped, we are truly at the intersection of things video games and film.
I'm going to have to get a subscription. Oh, yeah. Can you give me a free subscription?
I can look into that for you.
Thank you. So, if not, that's fine. I'll buy it anyway, but I know I want one.
So that's exciting. I actually start my first day tomorrow. And I'll let you guys know how it goes. So the majority, and that's cool and that's great, but... if I'm being honest, the majority of my time is spent focusing on Dawn Under Heaven, which is our Halo fan film that we've been talking about for quite some time. We have been working on a lot of things.
How far are we away from production?
We are now exactly 2 weeks. I don't want to think about it, but we are.
Well,
yeah, we are.
13
less than
days.
Saturday is the first day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Sunday. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm thinking it's Saturday still. Yes.
13 days.
Less than 2 weeks until we start rolling frames. And it's going to be exciting. So primarily we've been working on armor, and it's come really far in the last few weeks. We've made a lot of progress, specifically in the 3D printing realm. Mm-hmm. Lee's been printing nonstop.
It's going right now.
Yeah. So we have the trooper helmets, which have been molded and casted, the ODST helmet, which is printed, ready to mold, and the ODST parts and assault rifle parts that are being printed right now. And it's really exciting to see that come together.
Lee has really outdone himself. It's really phenomenal.
It did kind of break last night for a little bit.
Tell us this now? No. Tell us
I
this in
scared.
2 weeks when it's done.
There was like a...
Is that why we stopped raiding for a little bit?
That was right before... Like as we were starting, I was trying to fix it, and I was like, I can't do this right now. But like, because I was waiting and had like my headphones on, so I heard like this loud pop. I was like, oh, shit. What was that? I thought it was a cat first, like getting into something, but just the one of the access bars like came out of the its bearing on one side.
Oof.
So you just popped it back in?
Yeah, luckily it did stretch one of the belts, so it's a little looser than I would like it to be, but it seems to be working.
Good.
Okay, that's awesome. But yes, it's interesting because 3 years ago we had a version of the trooper helmet that we pepped and molded and made casts from that. And at the time, I was really excited about that because, Lee, you had made the model for that before Reach had even come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was this really cool piece of exclusive armor that we had made. And now that we have the 3D printed version, and we put them side by side, and it's really no comparison. Sean, I don't know if you've seen it yet.
Haven't seen the comparison yet,
It's incredible.
Awesome. ODST is even better.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get one of those later.
So we
and the assault rifle.
We started out as members of the 405th community, which is a website online community for armor builders like ourselves. And I got to say, of anyone in the community, I don't know if there's anyone building a better ODST or trooper helmet. I mean, this is like top tier stuff.
People usually focus on the Spartans because they want a full body,
right,
armor suit,
which look awesome, admittedly. But we got our own little niche.
I like the ODST.
Awesome.
So we
that's the best game too.
I agree.
We had our auditions at Cinequipped a few weeks ago, and the callbacks there as well. So we have our roster of 9 actors, which I have called my Fellowship of Halo, and we have a read through and training next weekend with Sean.
And fitting.
So Sean, can you speak a little bit about what you want to put our actors through?
Yeah, sure. I can. I'll talk to you about that. I just recently went through the full script. Wade had sent me the final script, and I was reading sections where I knew training would come in play, that it would be really crucial. Some squad movements for sure, but primarily the customs and courtesies, the true signs that gives away if somebody doesn't know if they're playing a soldier or not, or you know, their character, they don't understand the importance of the small details.
Yeah. What do you look for if someone isn't, if they don't know what it's like to be a soldier and they make a mistake, what do you notice in film and stuff?
It's always going to be like mannerisms, like almost the way that you dress yourself. You know, your hair is a big thing, the standards of your uniform. I mean, it could be as subtle as a shoelace not being in the right place.
Really?
I know if it's that detailed, but those are the things that you look for when you're in uniform. You look for if you've shaven that day, you know,
yeah.
It's just subtle things.
And also, I have a picture of you and I side by side when you, your first year in the military, I think,
yep.
And we were in Colorado, and our aunt took a picture of us saluting, and your salute versus my salute. It's so funny. Because I was trying to make it look real, and it's like, you can totally tell yours is real and mine isn't.
Yeah, that's another thing, is when you see soldiers pretend to salute and they do it wrong. It's like, if they just had some little bit of training on it, they could get it. But if they can butcher that one really bad, and you immediately lose the military viewers.
Right.
They catch up on it immediately. Yeah.
Do you think we have some room to adjust things, because it's, you know, based on a video game in the future?
We will have to. That's been
the year 2552.
Yeah, exactly. There's the whole time we've been working on this project, we've had to balance military accuracy and what is in Halo. It's tough because they do conflict every now and again. And I think at our panel at RTX, we've said we want to put emphasis on Halo first, so long as it doesn't conflict too much with what happens in the military.
As long as you're not distracted.
Yeah. There is an example, which I've said it before. There are soldiers, I think, in Halo 3 that have goatees.
Yeah.
Which looks kind of funny. I don't know.
Yeah. A lot of militaries around the world actually don't enforce that. So the UNSC, I'm calling it in at this, like, it needs to be specific for, you know, UNSC. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, because this is a military that's the whole, like, human race.
Yeah.
So it's like they have to embrace a lot more cultures and nationalities.
Yeah.
Rather than the U.S.
That is a good point.
But I figured that the marching and saluting and stuff and those physical movements.
Yeah, I think definitely, like, rank is a big one too. Like,
yeah.
Like the officers and like making sure that's clear.
Yeah.
Right. And then locations as well. We've done quite a bit of scouting. One of the places that we'll be shooting is in a gravel pit / quarry that is nearby three of ours, hometown, Elk River. Sean, you did some scouting there as well and was able to secure the location for us. I wanted you to touch on that a little bit.
Yeah. I went to three different quarries up in Elk River, and I met with one guy, Todd Place, an awesome guy, and he showed me the tours of these three locations, and I figured they would be perfect, but I wasn't sure until Wade came through and gave them a look, and they look really, really good. I think Wade was really impressed. And
yeah, and Placed it, he owns the company.
Yep.
That runs these pits, and he actually provides a lot of the gravel and concrete for stadiums, sports stadiums, and the ones in Minneapolis here.
Yeah, he was talking to me about how the dirt that's underneath the football fields and baseball fields, that's a very specific type of dirt under there, and they're the only place that manufactures that dirt. I think he said nationwide. I'm not going to quote him on that, but he said he's one of the only guys that makes this type of dirt.
That really weird dirt you see on like baseball diamonds.
Yeah, well, under the grass even, the grass that makes the grass grow.
Wow.
Yeah. And
it's weird to think of manufacturing dirt.
Yep.
Oh, and it's such a detailed process. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I won't talk to him when we're filming, but I would love to talk to him. This would be, that'd be absolutely fascinating.
And he's such a neat guy. I mean, he is just all about the film, the fan film stuff. I mean,
he did that one project you showed us where these like ATVs, like dirt bikes, people came in and they built a custom course for themselves.
Oh, yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
They did a helicopter with a camera rig. To get like people doing jumps and like stunts and stuff.
Yeah,
like
it was motocross ATV and motocrossing. I think it was called Butter, and he let the guys
come
and
film or something. Maybe.
Wow.
Yeah, They had pro ATV racers and
well,
stuff.
Well, I know that we weren't able to secure that mongoose thing in St. Cloud that was like $6,000 or something. But if there is something that looks similar.
That.
Yeah, I don't
just
know.
Just to like talk to them.
There's a town about an hour away called St. Cloud and I guess a well-known town. But a guy built a mongoose replica. It looked just like it.
Yeah.
But he was asking $6,000 and it was like 2 years ago that he was selling it. But if
we should have asked if we could rent it.
Yeah.
He'd probably want it featured.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it still on the market?
I looked. I can't find it anymore. So maybe it was sold.
Let us help sell your mongoose by showing it in
exactly.
Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're listening.
Mm-hmm. So that's been primarily what we're up to. And I guess next episode we'll be talking about shooting and what it's been like so far.
Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's always a challenge when you have a roster of actors that big that are required to be in scenes together. It's a challenge to get them together at the same time and place to rehearse.
Yeah.
When they're not paid.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they will be paid in Halo awesomeness.
Yeah.
Indeed. Some food.
Yeah, some food.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say this. I know I told you guys this, but when I was interviewing for at Game Informer, they were really curious about this project and they wanted to know about it, which was kind
sweet.
Of a cool feeling.
Maybe there's a little feature maybe. In the magazine. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe you're reading Game Informer, you
last,
see a little
last
feature.
Page or something.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So before we move into video games, there's a new
interesting
camera out. Yes.
Yes. Well, in the professional cinema world, there's really two main events every year. There's NAB, which is the National Association of Broadcasters Conference, and that's in Las Vegas, and that's the one I talked about. I went to that one last time, and we'll see. I don't know if I'm going again this year. Hopefully I am. And the other big one is IBC, which is in Germany. And I think that's the International Broadcasting
Commission.
Committee. Yeah, something. It doesn't matter.
I just made it up.
It's a big one. And for some reason, and it seems like for the past few years, like the bigger announcements have actually been coming out at IBC versus NAB. But I do get the feeling that IBC is more towards the high end of cinema, and NAB is sort of starting to stretch itself lower, like it's getting into the lower end professional.
It seems like it's more TV. Like broadcasting kind of stuff.
I would say it's 50.
From some of the stuff
I would say
that I saw.
Yeah, I'd say it's 50-50. Like, I think there's more show floor dedicated to cinema stuff.
Because it is called broadcasting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, but at any rate, and so this year at IBC, the big thing that was announced, which I wasn't surprised that it happened. I was surprised that it happened so soon, which was Arri, who makes such great cameras as the 435 film camera, the greatest MOS camera ever made.
Lord of the Rings shot with it.
Yep, a lot of that. And the Arri Cam, which is the best studio film camera ever made, and the newer digital ones of the Alexa and the Amira, has released the Arri Alexa 65, which is going to be a 65mm sensor, so pretty close to IMAX sized. So we'll shoot in 6.5K. which is, you know, bigger than even the Epic Dragon can do. And it does. And one of the interesting thing is you can't buy it. You can only rent it from Arri. Because thinking about it, the camera alone would be probably easily over $150,000. Mm-hmm. Easily. And also, they actually created their normal mount is the PL mount or positive lock, and it sort of looks like a four-leaf clover. There's these four flanges that lock in, and it's a really fantastic mount. And they've created a new one called, I think it's called XPL, and it's just a larger one to accommodate a 65mm sensor. And for that, currently there's only one set of lens, or I think there may be more sets, but there's only one kind of lenses that will fit on it, which are Hasselblad lenses. Have you guys know Hasselblad?
No.
Like in any movie, when you there's a photography, like a professional photography, and they have this like weird little camera that they're looking down at, that's probably a Hasselblad. It's a medium format camera. So, you know, so traditional film still cameras, it's a 35mm thing of film going in sideways, you know? And so that's small format. And, you know, that one, you can only blow that image up so big. Like, you know, basically 8.5 by 11, maybe a little bit bigger, but higher than that, then you start losing detail. Mm. Medium format is like a 4-inch negative, for like a 4x4-inch negative. So like that's the kind of stuff that they use when they want to do stuff for magazine covers, like back before digital.
And so it's similar to that, but film.
Yep, and yeah, and so this one they actually had to modify these Hasselblad lenses to bigger mounting options to get it onto the camera. And I think usually Hasselblad lenses are probably in the ballpark of like $20,000 a piece. Or
wow.
Something. So it's pretty crazy that they're doing this, and you know, it's showing further the push moving up towards the higher resolution.
Do you
and
think,
of course, with the Airy sensor, that will be phenomenal.
Do you think they did that with the intention that they want more lenses to come out that are compatible with it? Like they're trying to make that market?
At this point, I don't think so. Because even for the next couple years, I think that's going to be too expensive of a camera for like 90% of productions.
Really?
Yeah, because for a lot of people, like if they're going to shoot like that kind of size, like there's still a bunch of IMAX cameras. They have like IMAX 3D, 4K, and IMAX 4K cameras to use. That, you know, the fact that they're keeping it in their rental program says to me that like they know like nobody is ready to buy it. Like the frequency is still too small.
Which is interesting because, you know, the 435 back in the day was a quarter million, wasn't it? Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. But of course, at that point, everyone was shooting in 35.
Yeah.
Right now, very few people are shooting in 6K.
Okay. So I guess if the demand goes up, then.
Yeah. And I figure the demand will go up. I think, at least for movie screens, like we're probably going to top out around 10K for movie theaters. Wow. Before if we get any higher than 10K, it won't matter.
Yeah,
because when you like, if you want to make a movie screen bigger than modern day movie screens, then
you're talking IMAX, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like big stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? If it comes into Cinequipped and you're able to take a peek,
it won't.
Oh.
It's being rented only through Airy.
Oh. Okay.
So like we'd have to rent directly from Airy.
Okay.
Well, hey. So it's possible. As we'll say, maybe it's possible that someone wants to shoot with it here and we get it shipped to us.
Okay. Well,
or,
it's possible.
Or you know somebody that's on a project that's renting it.
Yeah.
And then you can get us on set.
I'll keep that in mind. It'd be great to see.
If Cinequip sends you to IBC this next year, we send you as a correspondent of Intersection, and you do some reporting for us.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. There we go.
Well, that's awesome. I guess keep us posted on that. So, also in video game news, before we get to the headliner for that, Super Smash Brothers for the 3DS just dropped, and Sean and I got it because we're huge Nintendo geeks. And,
understatement.
Yes.
Biggest
yes.
understatement.
This is, the fifth Super Smash Brothers game.
The
first handheld. And you know what? It's 60 frames per second, and it's brilliant. I think the only downside, I think, when you're playing 4v4 matches and the camera zooms out, it can be a little of a squinter.
Yep.
But it, like, I was playing like one-on-one matches, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
What are your impressions?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I was at the Best Buy preview for the Super Smash Brothers for the 3DS and the Wii U, and pretty much they made a bunch of adjustments as far as character playability, but I didn't know the resolution thing. Wait, I had no idea that it was 60 frames a second.
Oh yeah, it's smooth.
That's
really
wonderful.
Good.
The one thing that I wish they would have came across is a bundle that included a mount so you could plug in a GameCube controller and just keep the 3DS on the table, because playing with the 3DS controllers are a little bit clunky. I think if you had an actual control in your hand, it could get more competitive.
I think the reason
doesn't that defeat the purpose of the 3DS, though?
Kind of. But if you could bring your 3DS and bring the controller.
Yeah. It is tricky, yeah. Because the thing about the GameCube controller that works so well is when you play Super Smash, you really want to grip the thing, because
yeah.
It's like you get into the fighting.
Yeah.
And the 3DS, if you try and grip it, you really notice how plastic it is.
It's
good.
Yeah, you could break something.
Yeah. I haven't yet, but we'll see. I do think it was really clever how they did some stylistic changes from the console version. For example, they put black outlines around the characters so they're easier to see.
Yeah.
And they kind of cheated some of the graphics, which at a distance you can't tell.
Yep.
On a smaller screen you can't tell.
Yep.
So I think it was pulled off really well. I know there are some initial issues right now with when people try and play online. There's a little bit of lag.
Yep.
And Game Informer said this in this review. They played like Japanese people perfectly fine from their office, but they tried to play each other from their office and there was lag. So there's some sort of weird.
I was having issue. That problem yesterday. I could play team matches in Smash online, and then as soon as I would go to just regular Smash or one versus one, I would get an online error, or I would get in and it would lag so bad it would kick me off.
So, you know, hopefully that gets resolved. I'm not really sure how they would do it.
Yeah, but two thumbs up for me. I love that
and
game.
It's a question for you. Like, I've played a little bit of all the Super Smash Brothers previously to this, and my favorites are either the first one or the second one. The second one was Melee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Melee on GameCube.
I consider Melee probably one of my favorites. The later ones, I started not to care. Like, I felt like there was something off with the controls or how the characters acted, and I just didn't enjoy it as much. So how does this compare to one of those
it's
older
great.
Ones?
I think it's great. It's probably my favorite was the original, And the reason was, it might sound weird, but the action was slower. Mm-hmm. So your hits had more weight to them, and you could see what was happening easier.
Yeah.
This is probably my favorite since the original. And I will say my two favorite characters are Mega Man and Pac-Man. They're pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. Pac-Man's fantastic.
Pac-Man is so cool. Like he's the cartoon version of himself, so he has like arms and legs. But he has a bunch of...
I don't want that.
Well, no. He has a bunch of attacks where he goes into his 2D mode.
Oh,
like,
fantastic.
Like his like smash B, I think, his forward B. Like he throws out one of those white dots, and then he goes in his 2D mode, and he goes and like chomps on it, and he eats who's in his path. Huh? And his finishing smash is he goes into a giant 2D Pac-Man, and he just gobbles everyone on stage.
Yeah.
And they turn into ghosts or whatever.
And the neat thing is you can customize each character to have different attacks.
Yes.
So you can go in and change their up B, you can change their down B, and
you can make your me into a fighter and customize them as well. You can make them like a punch fighter, a sword fighter, and there's a third one, a
blaster.
Quick question, maybe you guys haven't played it enough, but does it feel balanced? Because I remember like with Melee when it came out that it wasn't super balanced, and then people hacked it to where when people were playing professional Super Smash Brothers, there was tweaking amongst the individual characters. So does it feel balanced right now, or does it feel like there's going to be changes later on?
Yeah, I think the tweaking one was actually Brawl. When Super Smash Brothers Brawl came out, there was the whole community was in an uproar, and they designed a game called Project M.
That's what it was.
And that took over from the step up of Melee. That's, Project M is used in the competitive Smash. And I haven't read the Project M review on it yet, but I have a feeling they're going to be very happy with it.
Cool.
And you know, I think, I don't know, Sean, what do you think? Because it seems like more of an online experience than Brawl. Do you think they're able to tweak it remotely, like for example Destiny, which we'll talk about in a minute? They're able to change things for the player on their servers, and it affects gameplay on their consoles.
I hope they do, because there are some things that I think they should tweak as far as the multiplayer goes, locally and online. We'll try the locally here. I haven't played my 3DS with somebody.
Even if you have discs, you can now have patches that go over.
Yeah. Yeah. And they already had an update.
Oh, there was one patch. Yeah.
There's an update, so far for Smash.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm really pleased with it, and we'll show you guys after the podcast.
You know, it is their destiny to make a better game.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, nice segue.
So, Bungie's...
A bad segue.
Bungie's latest game since Halo has been marketed for the last 2 years at least, I think. There's been a lot of anticipation, and it finally dropped within the last month, and we all got it. We've all been playing it. And I what are you guys' impressions of so far? I know we've talked ad nauseum with each other about it, but just for anyone who hasn't eavesdropped on our conversations.
Should we go around the table?
No story
spoilers. I don't know, because we have a lot of the same points.
I was pleased.
Yeah, one of the finest tuned first-person shooters I've ever played.
Truly.
The gameplay is phenomenal.
How it's made and how it looks is phenomenal.
The lighting
second to none.
Is stunning.
Yeah.
I've always loved Bungie's first-person shooters environments. I loved it in Halo. It's clear that it's a Bungie game in Destiny.
Have you played Marathon?
No, I haven't played Marathon.
You haven't played Bungie.
You haven't lived.
I
know.
Marathon.
But the thing is, when I got Halo 4, I really missed Bungie's environments and their lighting and their... Just, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but
something
just looked more real about how they design their environments, and I got that in Destiny, and it felt good.
Oh,
felt
yeah.
Good to get
and,
that.
And again. The other interesting thing for me is, and you guys know when I play Halo, when my favorite weapon in Halo is the Warthog. And
that's your favorite weapon?
Yeah.
Just mauling people
over?
Yeah,
exactly. And or, you know, like I just get ARs, and that's pretty much how I do, just spray and pray. Fighting. And Destiny is the first game ever where I've gone for the scout rifle, which is medium range single shot, and the sniper rifle is my usual other combo.
Do you think they make it more accessible?
I think so. I also think that the aggro distance on the bad guys helps, because I can stay a lot farther away with the sniper rifle and kill them, and they won't necessarily run yet.
Okay. Just real quick before we get too into details, a little bit of background. So this is obviously a AAA title from Bungie, teamed with Activision.
About a $500 million budget.
Yes, huge budget. This is like big Hollywood blockbuster version of a video game. And it was widely considered, you know, one of the biggest releases of the year. And I would have to personally agree with, along the lines of Game Informer's review, I would give it a 9 out of 10. They gave it like an 8.75. And I did enjoy it quite a bit. However, I would say, I think we agree that there were some missed opportunities.
And also a lot of areas of improvement. I know one thing that's it's starting to annoy me. And granted, like right now, I think I'm the lowest level here. I'm a 21 still. I think everyone else is a
Like 18.
You're 18.
I'm 17.
Okay.
28.
You have two versions you're playing?
Oh, on the PSN, I'm 17. On the Xbox One one, I think I'm only 13.
Okay. Well, then we'll have to game together or something. Yeah. But like one thing that's irritating me is, so like once you get up to level 20, there's the thing where like to get higher, then you need to find armor or whatever that has light in it, and which gets you into the higher levels. And apparently one of the big places to get that is do like the daily challenge stuff. Yes?
The daily and the weekly stuff.
The strike playlists.
The tiger playlist is what you want to play.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, and I've done a bit of that, and I am not getting jacked.
It's not enough.
Yeah.
It's a long game.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Once you get to 20, then like people say like that's when the game starts. Like as far as what you like about, like if you do like getting gear and stuff like that. Like
games like Diablo,
you have to put the time in. It's not like I play one thing and I get stuff. Yeah. That's not how it works.
And with like the daily play or the daily stuff, like there's a daily strike. I'm just getting so bored of those. I'm just replaying all the bloody strikes I've done.
This will feel like a grind.
And granted, of course, right now I'm also playing alone, which also did nothing. Like if I was playing with you guys, I'm sure I'd have a lot more fun.
You can mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, but like I know a lot of times when I'm on, you guys aren't necessarily on.
Yeah, so obviously a lot of bonuses and cool ways to play with other people. It is unfortunate that it's limited to three people for a lot of missions. For example, you would be playing with two other people, and I hop on and I can't join.
Yeah, you have to do like Crucible if you want to do something short.
Yeah, I will say...
Or the Strike playlist, though. These aren't the Strike.
No, they're three.
Oh, buddy.
So, We
did just do the raid with me and Ben and some of our other friends. Which is six people, and it was a lot of fun.
It's
very challenging. We didn't complete it, but
I think it's definitely one of the best experiences in the game. Like you want to get to level 26 specifically for that experience because it's a lot of fun. It feels like Raiders of the Lost Ark or like the Last Crusade. You're going through the dungeon to get to the very end.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's not anything like it.
You just have to get there to find out.
Dude. Maybe I know. Maybe it's not like it in the sense of narrative.
That's definitely. Jones, and I like that they in the raid that they like I for sure they fell short on the story and also with the gameplay I think they fell short that they focused too much on the shooting. There wasn't enough like vehicles or like one of the missions that you get to use, like one of the, if you're in a party, like one of the person gets to use a sword.
Yep, that was a cool part.
So it's just like they should have had more of that, and in the raid they do. Which is nice. Again, it's only like one person, but they also have like control, kind of like multiplayer aspect.
You have to with the AI. You have to work with people. It's more interactive.
Yeah, so it's definitely
just
a lot better.
It's not just shoot.
Just a bunch
people.
Of waves of people.
And,
right.
And for me, one thing is like it was, I've mentioned on the podcast before. Like I like video games a lot. Like for me, the first thing is always campaign. It's always the story missions because I don't always do a lot of PvP multiplayer stuff. And granted, though, on this game, it's really fun. I'm terrible. Terrible.
They do an easy
good.
Job for you to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was playing a game the other day where it was at one of like the 3v3. Is that the skirmish game type?
There is skirmish, and then there is also another one that's like skirmish, but it's like King of the Hill.
Oh, this was just 3v3. And both the other people on my team left, and it was only like a minute into the game. So I decided not to quit, and so it just made me killed over and over and over again.
I think you
again.
Can join in the middle of games, though, right?
Nobody else
for
joined.
For Crucible?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody else joined me. Yeah. It was just me being
as long as there's enough people
over
joining.
And over. Yeah. I killed them a couple times. I think it pissed them off.
So, David, I agree with you. I'm all about single-player campaign, and the thing is, like, if a game like Halo, it's that's, like, at its core, it also has great multiplayer.
Yes.
Like
It's a separate game, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like... Here it's they try to combine it in the one and the same, and you can't. You can't do it. You have to either focus on one or the other.
Yeah, but I do wish, going back to the varying gameplay aspects. You know, Halo 4. A really fun part about that is like, oh, this mission I get to fly a Pelican. Yep. This mission I'm
like the tank missions are my favorite.
Oh yeah,
yeah, I love yeah. Those and I really wish they would have done something like that. Or maybe incorporating your sparrow in some kind of way.
They have like, you can fly or ride a pike for a little bit, or interceptor, but
a couple of
those strikes
have
pretty quick.
Moments of that, but then they're just quickly done and over with.
Yeah. I think I mentioned it before in our ad hominem.
What?
We're not talking on the. What did you say?
I said we talked about our
ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum.
And at the moment, like I mentioned, that I think with upcoming DLC and whatever the continuation of this game will be, whether it be an expansion or like Destiny 2 or whatever, mm-hmm. They need to sort of take, I think, a leaf out of Ubisoft's book in the difference between Assassin's Creed 1 and Assassin's Creed 2. Because in Assassin's Creed 1, it's like this one where it's like every single mission is pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah.
And you just rinse and repeat a bunch of times. Whereas in the second game, like, you know, there's missions where all you do is just follow somebody. And obviously, I know it's not a stealth game, but, you know, it's like, what if, like, in this game, there are missions like, okay, there's a downed important guardian and you need to go and protect them and get them out of a situation. What if you need to go investigate something but not be seen by anyone or be do melee kills only? Like, some really interesting ones to change up.
That's why I'm excited about Unity, because they seem to have, like, they have, like, theft missions now.
Yeah. No, that's
which is really exciting because I love doing stealth.
That's the game that's going to get me back into the series because I didn't not care for... Black Flag.
I think Assassin's Creed 2 is a perfect comparison that I would have liked to have seen in Destiny's story, because you follow Ezio from a kid basically all the way to like middle. He's like middle aged. Well, in Assassin's Creed 2, the expansions.
He gets up and, you know, he's in his later 20s.
But just to see like how he progresses, and I really would have liked to have seen that, I guess, in my character, and not necessarily be a.
Yeah, I think where they fell short was the expectations and the marketing around. Mm-hmm. And they kept saying, like, it's not an MMO, it's not an MMO. And it's like, it's true, it's not an MMO.
You can dance, it's an MMO.
But it's a multiplayer game at its core. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it's
about. Well, that's the other thing, though.
Experience is playing with
it's about the Crucible, it's about the raid.
Well, that's one thing,
and
though,
then there's some missions.
We've talked about, like, whenever you go to the tower, the little subtitle to the tower is social.
Yeah,
and but there really isn't really anything social you do
there.
Like, there. You go there you to like dance turn with in people. Stuff. Yeah,
there's real people there, but they might as well be NPCs. There's no.
You don't interact. You can wave at somebody or point at somebody.
Yeah,
dance.
You dance a little bit and like hit a ball around, but that's about it.
I've had fun with a ball. I would slide kick it.
You can. I think part of it that they were trying to do and that they don't do very good well is like showcasing your armor, like because you can inspect people.
Oh yeah,
but it's just like. The amount of time I'm going to spend like going to each person and like seeing if they have something cool, like I'm just not going to do because I can do it on the internet.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I know we've talked about is I really want to be able to fly my ship because I love ships. And one thing is I actually went and I had a ship that was yellow and I hated it. And I actually went to the point where the other day I bought another one that's very similar. It's like the one version less of my current one just because it was a nice dark green because I hated the yellow so much. And he's like, I'm not spending my money on anything.
Yeah,
like,
you don't
have like
you don't need it for gear,
and I
you need it later for upgrades. You quickly need it for upgrades. And
I have never been short on any materials or money ever.
Well, when
for
you
upgrades.
Get the legendary stuff, you do. You really you take like it's like 10,000 glimmer or whatever to upgrade one part of your armor for legendary stuff.
I wouldn't care.
Another point that we are talking about, but I wanted to touch on is Joseph Staten leaving Bungie about a year ago or like. When was that? It was like the end of 2013.
A lot of people are blaming the current story state of things because he left and they changed a whole bunch
of
stuff.
Was it ever explained why he left?
No.
No.
By the way, he's one of the main story leads for Halo. He was like the director of cinematics and one of the co-writers for Halo. And what I liked about him is you see a lot of in the behind-the-scenes stuff of Halo is he just has a huge passion for...
Storytelling.
Storytelling, the characters, the lore... There's an interview with Jen Taylor, who did the voice of Cortana, where she was talking about how Joe was basically saying, all right, now Cortana is like thinking this and this is happening and there's all these things. And Jen's just like, do you want me to be scared or like, just I don't care. Just tell me what I need to know. But yeah, he really geeks out about, you know, finer narrative details. And with him leaving, the article that we read hinted, I think, at story elements that were taken away possibly because of him leaving, or if there's some kind of I don't want to say confidentiality problem, but maybe he left and they wanted to get away from elements that he had put into the story. And evidence for this were characters and I think levels and parts of the game in the alpha that were taken away, or not the alpha, but the pre-alpha. There's like some tests that were done that the writer of the article participated in.
Yeah.
So I don't know. They reference like the character, the Crow, who was part of the non-Guardians, I think.
Mm-hmm. Who is now the Queen's brother.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was in the trailer. In one of the early trailers you saw.
Mm-hmm. Which very well might still be in, but...
Yeah, I'm assuming that, you know, it could have been moved around and moved to the DLC.
One thing I'm hoping that they do, and with it being partnered with, you know, Activision, and obviously they all want to make money. I don't know if they will. But I'm hoping that there will be additional story things added that are not necessarily DLC. Like, maybe, like, every once... And to be fair, I do plan on probably buying the DLC. But, you know, every once in a while, like, okay, well, here, we're going to add two or three new story missions that are just... We're just adding them. You don't have to pay extra. They just come into your game.
I would like a more linear campaign, because it felt like the campaign within Destiny was a whole bunch of, like, reused spaces. And I didn't really like that at all.
That is a good point, because it felt a lot like Spartan Ops in Halo 4, which is unfortunate because that's just an added bonus to the game. It's not a single-player campaign in itself. Mm-hmm. You go repeatedly to the same environments, which are amazing the first time you go through, and I wanted to explore and see all these things. But after going back again and again, I'm thinking, why? Mm-hmm. Why do I have to come back
here? Because of the social.
Because of the
MMO stuff.
I would say that the strikes are act more like Halo missions than the actual missions themselves. Because, like, for Halo 3 and for, I guess, specifically for Reach, they had bonuses where you would, if you could play, like, there was a weekly mission that you would go back to in Reach that you would get extra bonus points for that you could spend in multiplayer by doing certain stuff. And I think for that, they found that successful, and okay, let's implement that for Destiny. But that came across as a strike.
And listening to you guys, though, I think the problem is they made a game that's not the game that you wanted, and you still want the other game.
Well, it's not just that.
Like, that's what comes down to it, though.
No, it's expectations. Because
you can't base everything off something that you didn't get. It's what you did get. Do you like it or not? And if it's no, then... That's the answer. It's like, it's not that they're going to change the game to make it the game that you wanted.
Right. No, because
they're making the game they wanted.
I would agree. I think what some of my frustration was is that they marketed it in a different way than it actually.
No,
came
I agree
out.
With that.
Yeah.
So that is a good point. Either way, you know, still really enjoyed it.
I'm still playing.
I got a question for you guys, if you guys have experienced it yet, but I know I love doing the Explorer missions. Like, I haven't beat the game yet, but I just love doing the Explorer ones. And one of my favorite areas is on Mars, when you just explore and you can come across a war that happens every once in a while between the Thrall and the Fallen. And there's literally just onslaughts of enemies. If you end up playing in Explore for 30 minutes, you might experience it.
And I came across one on
that's
Earth.
That's so cool.
Well, that's actually...
at, like, level 26. There's too many.
Now you mentioned the Explore thing, that's another thing that bothers me. That is not because it wasn't what I was expecting, but I think it's just poorly done. Is the maps, one, that you don't have a map when you're on the planet. You can only see a map when you're in orbit. But then also, it seems that every world, you spawn in, and you either go right or you go left. And it sort of then makes an arc. It actually makes a loop. A lot of the things.
Yeah, it's a big loop. Because I've explored the additional areas like that you usually don't go to, and it's just a big loop.
Yeah,
like you come out and you're like, I'm back over here.
And I just feel like it's there, especially with going through, and, you know, Mars is one of the last. It is the last.
Yeah.
It is the last planet that you get to. And, like, you spawn in, and I just see these big dunes, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a giant, like, open space, and, like, it's going to be really cool, and it totally wasn't, and it was, like, a really small area, and I feel like they, especially, like, harnessing this power.
It is pretty
systems.
Big, though, like, because some of, like, the strikes, you have to, like, travel for, like,
it's
8
big.
Minutes to
really?
Get to your destination.
Yeah, pretty cool. I would say it's big for a Bungie game, but when you think of first-person shooters like Planet Side, where you have these huge maps, it's
less detail, though.
Yes.
Because you have to offset the detail and the graphics with how big it is.
Yeah. So, but I also think, though, augmenting what they're able to put on their servers and how you are, and I think that I'm hoping that, of course, and, you know, one nice thing with Destiny is with future games is, like, currently there's only one area on every planet. And, you know, next game, maybe there'll be two different, like, two regions of Mars. Like,
you
maybe
still
go to the caps or the current area.
The content's not on the servers, though. It has to be local for all the...
That's not entirely
assets.
True. They change some stuff without having to do an update to the local stuff. I've noticed that a couple of times.
Yeah.
Well,
how it renders and stuff, yeah.
So overall, we all enjoy the game and have high hopes for the future. And so this last month, we decided to see Zero Theorem because I really wanted to see it and convinced you guys to see it as well.
You did not have to convince me. I like Terry Gilliam.
Yeah, it's a Terry Gilliam film.
According to David, we saw it before it came out, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, like I show up, like we show up over to watch it. And I'm like, hey, guys, how are we going to watch this? This movie doesn't come out in theaters for another week.
Yeah, and I'm like, I have it.
Blew my mind.
Was it an indie film? Was it an independent film?
Technically, yes.
I guess I don't know.
I think technically.
Was it like Fox Spotlight, kind of the equivalent of?
No, I don't think it does anything.
Well, I see, it's tough because, you know, he's obviously a really well-known director.
But he has very
eclectic
films.
Regardless of who funded it, it seemed like a professional movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was indie. It had like a
I'd
lot
say
of
the scale was pretty small, though, as far as like it was like pretty much one set.
Yeah.
The entire movie.
So, it's a story. Christoph Waltz plays the protagonist, and he's kind of a on the far end of middle-aged guy who's in this is like a dystopian future kind of play, not dystopian, but it's a bleak look on the future.
It's a very stylized
future. Yeah, very stylized look at the future. I think in London is where I felt like it was. And he's like this programmer who is, I guess, what's his affliction? He's depressed. He's socially isolated, and he's searching for purpose for his life by the means of a phone call that he missed when he was younger. And what I really loved about this movie, and check out the trailer if you can, it's dripping with metaphors. There are just metaphors everywhere in the movie, and you need to watch it again. I need to watch it again just to get a feel for it. Just a quick example, he's bald in the movie, and quite a few scenes he's wearing like this brownish robe, which looks like kind of a monk, like an old monk robe, and he's living in this abandoned church. So he has this solitude life. He's living in this church, and he looks like a monk, and that's never stated explicitly, but it's just a symbolic metaphor that I really liked. And there's a bunch of other stuff too, but yeah, I really appreciated all the metaphors and just some of the stylized choices. Like, he goes to a party. Everyone at the party has a screen they're looking at, whether it's a tablet or a phone. Nobody's interacting in person. They're all just standing next to each other with like headphones, yeah. And just like, yeah.
And like, they'll be on their each other's screens. Like,
yeah.
Even they're standing next to each other.
Well, yeah. And also Matt Damon in the movie is pretty hilarious. Yeah. When you first meet him,
yeah,
like, his clothes are like blend into the couch or the chair he's sitting in. And then in the scene, like it's in the same party, like 2 minutes later, he has a different set of clothes and he's blending in with the drapes.
Yeah.
It's really never like reason why he does that.
I know.
It's just like, because he's like a surveillance, like the big brother.
Yeah,
exactly. Quick question with this. Has anyone here seen any other Terry Gilliam films, Ben? Mm-hmm. So what is it?
Fear and Loathing
in Las Vegas, yeah. Time Bandits, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
I haven't seen it.
Imaginarium Dr.
I think I've seen Time Bandits on Netflix.
Okay.
Fear and Loathing.
I don't remember. I don't think he directed Monty Python, but he was definitely like one of the.
He was one of the characters.
He was one of the characters, yeah. But he. I feel like he was one of the main people. Like,
oh, he was. Yeah,
working on it.
No, he was one of the main crew. Mm-hmm. The main five. Is it the five guys? I think.
But he was Patsy. Yeah. He was the guy clapping the coconuts together.
Oh, that's him. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Why? What was your point with that?
Well, I'm just curious because, and you may have seen this, like, Terry Gilliam has a very, very distinct style to how he does it, and this does it.
Yeah, it's very bizarre.
And it's interesting to see, like, I find it's very easy to identify a Terry Gilliam film, especially if you watch some of his other films. They have a lot of similar elements, like, you know, like in this, like, the, like, sort of everything is exaggerated.
Yes.
Everything, you know, in this world, advertising is everywhere.
Yeah,
like, it's like it's everything. Like in another world, like it's not necessarily advertising, but like if you watch things like The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, like the locations and scenes are these giant, exaggerated things.
Yeah, and you definitely get that feeling when he goes out on the street in London. You know what? It's funny because sometimes I don't think that those scenes were that exaggerated. I mean, when you go out and you see these giant billboards, and like Times Square is a great example. It's like straight out of a caricature. My favorite part was when he goes out in the street and there's this giant screen of this guy in a suit and he's like, hey, everyone's getting rich but you, sign up for this. And
I thought there's the one where like there's these long screens that like wrap around buildings and the ad follows
them. That was
and
brilliant.
And then because
I could totally
else.
See an ad company doing
that.
That was like a Minority Report where they're like, they scan your eyes and like target directly to you.
I think there was like some design for such a billboard where like it would try and scan your retinas to see if there's any images that you have recently seen, like residual images. So like, you were just looking at pants. I'm going to put a pants ad.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I think that's possible. I don't think it is either.
Rampage on some ads.
So I guess the main plot of the film is Christoph Waltz's character, Cohen is his name. He wants to work at home, and they eventually assign him to solve the Zero Theorem, which basically is a mathematical equation trying to prove that everything adds up to nothing. Basically,
that life is meaningless.
Well, it's funny.
I was trying to disprove
He was trying to prove it, and there was an interesting. They were trying to connect two different ideas. One, that mathematically the matter and energy in the universe equals zero, I think, and two, like ethically and I guess morally, everything is meaningless, which I think are two very different things, but they were putting together.
Yeah.
My only problem with that is recently, like that idea of that everything, like the universe is going to nothing, mm-hmm. like has been disproven because of dark energy, and that the universe is actually accelerating rather than going down to nothing.
Well, that and redshift is the other thing. Is everything?
So it's like for me, like I'm. Well, like my knowledge, like I'm past that point.
As far as whether or not the universe is going to collapse back in on itself, yeah, that won't happen.
Yeah,
but the energy itself will eventually run.
Yeah, well, they're saying that everything is accounted for and equals like is negated of itself.
Well, it's interesting because I think one of the main things the film struggles with are those two ideas, whether it does or doesn't equal zero. And an interesting point of the film is, talented as this programmer was, he could never prove that it was zero.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a cool space that the film left for us to interpret, because everyone tried but couldn't prove
it. Yeah, it wasn't about whether it was true or not. It was whether you had that as your belief or not.
Right.
Yeah.
And whether or not you could find meaning in your life.
You create the meaning in your life.
Without searching for the call. Right. And there are a bunch of themes that I really liked that it introduced.
Yeah.
I think it was saying that you can search for it. You can't wait for it. Yes. I think that's the point they were trying to make.
And I was so impressed with how creative they were thinking about the interfacing, like the technology and stuff.
Yeah.
I was just
super cool.
Blown away. Like in my imagination, that's kind of how life.
A lot of it made no sense.
I know.
Which was like the fun part.
All like the data disks, if you will, were all like liquid.
Little vials. Well, that's a plausible like biological like storage and stuff.
Yeah,
and the way he interfaces, he goes into like this matrix server thing with this with the female lead, and he has to wear an entire suit, like a bodysuit, to go into it.
Yep.
I thought they were biking with their computers. Like some of them were like,
the power.
Which is actually a good idea. They have those. Like it's a way to like kind of keep your body active while you're sitting all day, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When he was programming, it was more like a game.
Yeah, he had like a gamepad or whatever it was.
So cool.
which you know what I liked those stylistic designs because it was so quirky and weird and bizarre. Yeah. You see so many movies that take themselves so seriously where everything is like it has to be cool and
it has to be explained.
Like,
scrolling code.
Because this one it didn't explain it. Like it never explained like in the beginning when he's still at the office. Like it's that spinning cube and he's doing something to it, but they never explain what it is.
Yeah.
But then it's you just give like it time and then the movie did a very good job of like they just keep going with things like you just accept it.
Well, yeah, you don't
spend
it doesn't, and you move it doesn't, on. It doesn't matter what it is. He's just coding. It doesn't have to make sense. So I don't know what you guys think. I really enjoyed it. I think it was definitely worth the purchase.
I thought Christoph Waltz did an amazing job. I should always expect this from him just because he's that great. But yeah, I thought it was superb.
Loved it. I'm going to watch it again.
Yeah, I liked it.
I thought the costume design was very cool.
Yeah.
Especially with like Matt Damon's characters. Like even though he blended into stuff, when he stepped out of it, his clothes didn't look crappy. They still look okay.
Are you saying that you would wear one of those suits?
I would wear specifically the zebra one.
Oh, and I also loved the kid character who's Matt Damon's son. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's his son?
Sorry. The management son. To me, he perfectly demonstrated. He embodied the young, teenage kid who thought he knew everything and just walked over like other people and just like, listen, just do this is what you got to do. And
that was, though, based on him, was my only flaw in the movie was there was like this big scene of him getting sick and like, and there was like this relationship between him and the main character that just, it like just ended and like,
it fell flat.
It didn't seem to matter.
Yeah.
With the end of the movie, or I don't know. It seemed like it was going somewhere and then it just went away.
It seemed like, I don't know, either it was kind of rushed or they took stuff out, but yeah, it just happened really quickly and wasn't.
Or maybe it was just used to like make him like think about like health and like living, and I don't know.
Maybe you have to watch it again.
Yeah, it's just so deep and complex. You don't even know.
That was an emotional part, though. I mean, you had an attachment to that part of the story. At least I did, between the the kid.
Yeah,
and
the...
I think when he finally showed some vulnerability, then
it made him like, he went outside with him. Yeah. He stopped referring to him in the third party.
Mm. Oh yeah, he starts
the kid helped him do that.
Yep. And he also realized that the camera was watching at that moment. I don't know if you remember that, but he realized that his father was watching his son get that sick and not doing anything about it. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's when he destroyed the mirror and the camera was there.
Oh, yeah.
So
I really loved his relationship with the woman character and how that progressed and how that changed. I thought it was very cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally. Those French actresses, love them. There's lots going on, lots to do, and next episode we will be talking all about Don Draven production, which we gotta do a lot for coming up.
Get back to work right now.
Yep, we're going back to work, back to the office, back to the salt pits. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
It's salt mines.
Whatever. Got a mine in a pit. Anyway, make sure to tune in next week, and we will fill you in on all the awesome film, video game.
And by next week, you mean next month.
Yes.
That is precisely what I meant. Thank you very much. Don't quote me on what I say. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Mine and a pit are quite different. A pit is open. Is open.
Yeah, the difference between a mine and a pit is the difference between them is a ceiling.